And good Tuesday morning, live from the downtown area of Coffeyville. We find our historic KGGF studios. I'm Sam Speck, glad you're with us here on this Tuesday morning as we are joined over the phones, just like many Tuesdays throughout the month, by the Kansas Attorney General, Derek Schmidt. Derek, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Sam.
Very good morning to have to you as well. Derek, I missed you last time. I was feeling a little bit under the weather, but thanks for joining us here. How you been the last month or so?
Well, I've been great, and I'm glad you're feeling better.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, feeling good to get back into the seat here and talk on behalf of all the news coming out of your guys' office, as well as anything that you might want to get out to our listeners here. So, Derek, thank you so much. Again, speaking with the Kansas Attorney General here, as we got a few things to get here. CJ always hooks me up with a great line of topics to talk about. I've dove through a couple of them, so I've got some good questions here for you now. I think a good place to start here is usually one of the biggest parts of debate really in anywhere is health care and a health plan. Now, I know there was a few states a few months back, I believe led by New York, if I'm reading that correctly, that believed that it was unlawful, though you and many other attorney generals out there happen to disagree. So if you don't mind, will you kind of expand on what New York was trying to say was unlawful and why you disagree?
Well, sure. The particular issue here is sort of a mind-numbing administrative law legal issue, so I'll sort of set that aside. The bigger picture of what's going on here is that there's a policy fight in Washington over the scope of eligibility to participate in what are called association health plans. And the concept behind an association health plan is that a group of small but independent from each other businesses, or sometimes individuals, can come together just as if they were a single larger organization, and then, like they were a larger group, they have more market power to negotiate a better deal for health care for all of themselves and their employees. That's the concept. That's not new. What's going on now is that during the Obama administration, there was a U.S. Department of Labor regulation that really restricted eligibility to participate in an association health plan. The Trump administration now has proposed a new regulation to replace the old one that would ease those restrictions up, so that would allow a broader universe of small businesses to participate in association health plans. We think that's a good idea as a matter of policy. The more that can participate, the better. It's more choices, more options, more ability to get people covered by health insurance. But we're on one side of that debate. Apparently, there are others who view it differently, and a group of states led by New York filed a federal lawsuit challenging the new rule that was offered up by the Trump administration that would ease eligibility and allow more people to participate. They actually persuaded a federal district judge that they were correct, and he entered an order blocking the new regulation, and we just think that's dead wrong. And so we've now weighed in on the other side in the appellate courts. We're, like I say, making sort of a technical administrative law argument over why we think the U.S. Labor Department may do this. But the bottom line, when you cut through it all, we're on the side of allowing more choice options for people, small businesses, to participate in this different method of obtaining health insurance coverage. And what this really boils down to, the group of people that everybody's fighting about, are self-employed individuals who have no employees. Under the old law, self-employed small businesses could participate in an association health plan, but only if they actually have other employees besides the person who is the business. We think the door ought to be opened a little wider so that the smallest of small businesses, the folks that are self-employed and they work for themselves and that's it, they ought to have the same options. So that's what we're engaged in on that.
Absolutely. Well, and it kind of sounds, you had mentioned as well, the Obama administration kind of had theirs, Trump steps in. Throughout the years, is this something that the new administrations that come into office kind of do, or is this something completely new within the last, 4 to 8 years that they come in and kind of, take over and make a new plan in terms of whether it's association health plans or health care in general?
Well, it's certainly not new for a new presidential administration, especially if there's a change in party or philosophy, to change course on policy and to make changes in federal regulations or approaches in their agencies, that are contrary to how things were done before. I think what's different this time, especially on this subject, are sort of two things. One is that the sort of emotions and politics surrounding Obamacare, the federal statute from the prior administration, still are so intense that anything that relates to health care now draws, you know, sort of gets people to leap to their feet and raise their fists. That's one. So it was a, you know, maybe a bit more challenging to change course, even if it's not a particularly dramatic change. The other thing that's different is that in the Obama years, probably because of the gridlock in Washington where you had Congress just dug in and you had the president determined to do things, not just on health care, but on a range of things, that the president really stretched executive authority. He tried and did a lot of things just by unilateral executive action that historically would have required an act of Congress to approve. And because he really stretched the boundaries in a lot of ways, it's perhaps not surprising that now that we have a new president who views things fundamentally differently, he wants to rely on that same executive authority to undo some of those things. The theory being if the president alone could do it, the president alone can undo it. And I think that's why we're seeing more of this type of litigation and conflict now than we have in the past.
Absolutely. And you kind of answered my next question as well. I didn't know. Obviously, there's always a fiasco with the decisions that are made with the Trump administration. I didn't know if that, you know, leveled a certain amount of bias towards the decisions as well, because obviously New York, not a red state by any means, but leading the charge kind of sounds like. I didn't know if it was specifically because Trump trying to change Obama's, but it does kind of seems, you know, with everything, it almost kind of entails a little bit of that as well. So anyway, speaking on behalf of Kansas Attorney General's office, it is the Kansas over the phone. Any other final notes that you wanted to put out for our listeners about this expanding association health plan? I know you guys probably had to still have some work to do, but any final notes?
No, I'd just say, you know, our view is that unless the law forbids it, and here it doesn't, consumers ought to be free, states ought to be free to experiment and provide more options to the maximum extent, because goodness knows, we still have plenty of work to do in making health insurance coverage affordable and available to a lot of folks.
Absolutely. Well, let's kind of shift our focus over here now to another thing that I was diving through that really interests me here. It looks like more than 100 former ITT students, tech students rather, from Kansas are going to receive the debt relief. It seemed like money that was already kind of owed to them, but now it's finally getting sent their way. Can you kind of explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, there was a private educational institution, private college, for-profit college, ITT Technical Institute that operated for a number of years. It went belly up in 2016. I can't recall if it had a campus in Tulsa or not. It did in Wichita and in Overland Park. So we've been very involved on behalf of Kansas in trying to help clean up the aftermath of this group going belly up. There are about 100 Kansans, a little more than that, 103, I think the number actually is, who were caught in a particular debt financing scheme that the college, the company, was using. And it's fairly intricate, but the basic concept is when you go in and apply to be a student and then apply for a federal student loan, because that's how this group was making money, was feeding off federal student loan money, there would often be a gap between what the college was charging and what the amount of loans that the federal government would make available. And in order to make up that gap, the college offered on the spot to an applicant something called temporary credit, TC. And essentially they said, well, for a year we'll lend you the money go ahead and enroll and pay our higher rates. And a lot of people did that. What we've alleged is that the college either knew or should have known at that point, because they didn't do their due diligence, or they did and they just ignored the answer, that a lot of these folks that they were lending this money to were never going to be able to pay it back. That's why they did not qualify in the first place for a larger amount of federal student aid, because their income stream simply didn't support it. So a year passes, now the gap funding comes due, and the college says, we want our money. And folks say, we don't have your money, we can't pay you. And that's where the scheme came in, because then the college said, well, then how about going over to this third-party lender, and they will lend you the money. What the college didn't tell people was that the so-called third-party lender was a different company that was set up by the college. And the only thing it did was provide loans to backfill the hole for that temporary credit that was now unavailable at very, very high interest rates. And so essentially the college backed people into a corner and gave them no choice but to borrow from these exorbitant rate loans that the college had set up and sort of hidden in a third party. That's illegal, and we finally reached a settlement with the college where they're going to cancel all those loans. So to the extent they haven't been paid already, folks are going to be relieved of having to pay them back, which is especially satisfying because these folks never wound up getting any benefit from the loan because the college went out of business. So they didn't even get a degree at the end of the day. So it's about $1 million, a little over, that's going to be returned to Kansans through that debt cancellation. We realize that that's, you know, a consolation prize. What would have been better would have been to avoid the scheme in the first place, but at this point it's the best we can do, and we're glad to be able to help to the extent that we can.
Yeah, I mean, geez, what a, you know, just kind of a web of things that kind of trickle down all the way. Now, you know, it's good to that the students are getting, you know, the money back, but as you had mentioned, not a degree. They had lost a lot of time. They had lost a lot of value within what they had thought going there. Was this kind of, you know, how was this brought to your guys' attention? Was it an investigation that you had gone? I know you said maybe 2016 or so that ITT Tech went belly up, but was that really when the investigation started, or how did this come to your attention?
Well, there's been an investigation of the college and some of its marketing and business practices before 2016. In fact, it was both a federal and a state investigation, and I think the investigation probably had an effect on the college's decision to file for bankruptcy. Not surprisingly, once that happened, we started to hear complaints from a lot of Kansans who were affected by this. They'd file consumer complaints with us saying, hey, we've got this problem. We're being asked to continue to pay off the debt to a college that's out of business for a degree that we're never going to get. And by the way, now we know that the terms of that debt were illegal from the inception. And so it came to us through complaints from Kansans who were affected.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if there's any campuses or locations down in Oklahoma, but I know we have a large listening area down there. And if you're one of these that happens to maybe be in the same boat, Dave, definitely do some research. As you heard here from Derek Schmidt, it came from complaints from Kansans, and you might be the next boat. So hopefully there are some individuals out there, again, getting their, you know, over 100 now getting their settlement. But again, you mentioned it, they're not getting their degree. That time was wasted, and what a bummer. That is truly. But so looks like here we'll shift over a little bit more. We'll stick with education here. But finally, it looks like we have come to a little bit of an agreement here after seven rounds of arguments within the Gannon versus the state. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Well, we'll cross our fingers and pluck a four-leaf clover and
we'll hope.
And, say a little prayer and hope that this means the end of this school finance litigation. Yeah, you're exactly right. It took seven trips to the Kansas Supreme Court, seven responses by the legislature and the governor. But finally, the court this past week signed off, approved the school finance law that the legislature and the governor have enacted. They said it's both equitable and adequate, which are the two things that the court tells us the Constitution requires. The court did hold on to jurisdiction in the case. Normally, at the end of a lawsuit, the lawsuit is dismissed. Here, the court said you're on a path to doing what you have to do under the Kansas Constitution, but you're not there yet. And so the court decided to hold on to jurisdiction in the case until the state finishes, at least until the state finishes phasing in the increased funding that has been promised over the next handful of years. So, you know, we'll see what happens going forward. I think it's good news that we're finally at a point that maybe we can get this litigation behind us, and then policymakers can talk about education policy, as opposed to talking about, you know, education litigation and what has to be done to satisfy a court order. But, you know, we'll see where things go going forward. There's going to be a huge amount of new money in the school finance system. I hope everything is used well. I hope it has the result that's intended, which is, you know, better educational opportunities for our kids. But when the dust all settles, assuming this thing is fully phased in, Kansas taxpayers will be spending and schools will be receiving right at $1 billion per year, ongoing, in additional money by, I think it's the 2022-23 school year, compared with where they were at the start of this litigation. And that's roughly a one-third increase, not quite one-third, in total amount of money that state taxpayers spend on public education. That doesn't count retirement benefits for school employees and the state taxpayer match on that. It doesn't count local money put in through the local option budget. That's just direct state expenditures. So, you know, some people think that's terrific. Some people think it's a tragedy. I just think it's where we are, and I hope that we can stay out of court on this going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like you had mentioned, hopefully these dollars that we're putting forth is worth every idea that we've got going forward. Again, speaking with Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt here on this Tuesday morning. Great place to find a lot of news is at ag.ks.gov. A great place to find any of the latest information and news releases up there from Derek Schmidt and his office. Derek, thank you so much for joining us here on a Tuesday. Any final notes that you would like to get out for our listeners here before we lose you?
No, just appreciate the chance to visit with everybody, Sam, and wish everybody well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Derek, and we'll check in with you guys next month.
Thanks.
Thanks so much. Again, that is Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt joining us over the phones here this morning. You can listen back to this interview on the main screen of our website underneath the community tab at kggfradio.com. Lots of great information throughout this as well. And then again, I'll plug that that website once again. It's ag.ks.gov. Lots of information up there out of anything regarding the Attorney General's office as Derek Schmidt. Great job there. Always appreciate the radio time that he gives us there. So here on this Tuesday morning, again, we'll speak with the Independent Chamber of Commerce on the other side of the news here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.